What is up, doe? Welcome to another edition of Picks and Roll Podcast. This is Adam McGinnis, where we discuss all things Washington Wizards. With me today is Mr. Truth About It, Kyle. I die, you die, we all die. Mr. We Die, what is up, my man?
What's going on? It's a nice sort of lazy Sunday in Mount Pleasant, D.C. We know the time for things to start back up is after Labor Day, which is tomorrow. And so now it seems like an appropriate moment to assess the Wizards season it was and sort of take stock of where this team is going for 2015-2016.
Yeah, I hope everyone is having a great Labor Day. We're spending our Sunday Labor Day in my studio here. And if you haven't noticed, you can tell that me and Kyle are next to each other instead of on Skype or on the Google machine. And just, you know, just stepping up our game a little bit. You know, the Wizards stepped up their game this year somewhat, and now it's for us to step up our game for you, the fans, and thank you for coming. Kyle, before we discuss this team, how's your summer?
Summer's been nice. Haven't taken too many long vacations. It's been a nice working summer, but took a lot of time off from following the NBA intensely after the finals, and which was a great finals. And I've just been spending, you know, time with the wife. Took a long weekend in Chicago, a long weekend or two in New York, and it's been a nice summer.
Did you see any John Wall gear when you were in Chi-Town? Or?
No, I went to the Adidas store, and no, like, well, they had one pair of John Wall shoes on sale. Maybe, I saw a guy wearing a John Wall jersey t-shirt start to go into the Adidas store in Chicago, then he left. But no, the Wizards, as we know, you know, as was revealed with the NBA television national schedule, still don't get a lot of respect, but you know they have to do some things to earn it. So no one knows that more than us.
Yeah, we'll get into the schedule a little on my summer. Thanks for asking.
How was your summer, Adam?
You know, good times. A lot of tubing trips, hanging out with family, camping. It was fun. Went to the Iowa State Fair recently. A lot of food on a stick. Tony, a Wizards fan, I know you're probably listening. He loves my snaps. He said that I snapped Snapchat, shout out, better than the State Fair. He felt like he was there. He felt like he felt the food on the stick. My food choices, for those wondering, because the people watching is amazing, and the fried food was the cheese curds. I got some garlic cheese curds. Okay. There's amazing and awful for you, as they sound, and the next day, some fried mac and cheese.
Nice.
Pork chop on a stick. The turkey legs are probably the top choice. But yes, it was a fun time with the fam, but nobody really gives a shit about our personal lives, even though maybe you should. But let's get to this team. What we're gonna do for this episode is just kind of recap the summer. It's been a busy summer. The draft, summer league, a lot of acquisitions.
Yeah, the team formerly had a lot of accusations. Now just some acquisitions. But thankfully, they have a quiet summer, so no one's getting in trouble or fighting in clubs or anything like that.
Well, aside from the five deep crew, but we'll also get into that too. Some player signings. And we're going to get into all these. Let's drill down. But first, before we get into the summer or how we see the fall playing out or the roster makeup, we probably have to recap what happened at the end of the year. So everyone knows the Wizards sweep the Raptors. You know, we the North. I talked a lot of junk. It was an amazing series. They went small ball, took them down. John Wall was amazing. They take the Hawks, they play the Hawks, and it ends up being the Wizards fall in six games at home, 4-2. And when you look back at it, it feels like obviously a different from the playoffs from the year before, but technically, on paper, the same results. They won the same amount of games, it lost the same second round in the six games at home to the second round. So technically, they finished this exact same from the year before.
Did they progress?
Yes, even though it felt different.
I would say yeah. They, you know, first of all, it's the context is they as disappointing as a finish it was, and as part of that is due to John Wall breaking his hand, and he kind of sort of came back and was had just played miraculously for someone with a broken hand. And then, you know, there's disappointment in this team learning lessons that it seemed before were evident, such as, you know, not having to commit so much to Nene at the four, and that, you know, they struggle with defense in those last couple games. You know, even Paul Pierce struggled with defense. As many as amazing as his season with the Wizards was, you know, he hit some great shots. I think when you look at it, they had the historical, you know, start. Sort of things came back to reality during the middle of the season, but it's still one of the best seasons in franchise history. They traded blows with the number one seed.
Are you giving context? Are you giving context? Context is not allowed, Kyle.
It is. You know, we give plenty of context otherwise, that, you know, just, you know, for what this team has done, it's okay to be disappointed in the way certain things went down, whether it's playing style, whether it's stuff with Randy Whitman, or whether it's just sort of, you know, what people like to say is cursed with injuries. But, you're trading blows with number one seed. Yeah, the Hawks had their issues into the playoffs, but it's still overall, it was a good season that they made it to the second round, only the second round again, but I don't think they were, you know, expected to make it to the second round past the Bulls last year. So while in terms of advancing in the playoffs, yes, it's a lateral move. I think they did step up. You saw Beal step a little bit more in the playoffs. He needs to be more consistent. You know, he and Wall need to remain healthy. And then the biggest part of, you know, stepping up was Otto Porter. He was a revelation this year, especially how he played
free
in the
Otto,
playoffs.
Free Otto, right?
Free Otto was freed, and you know, I was certainly. Skeptical? A critic. I was a critic, maybe skeptical. I mean, Otto had a long way to go. We're talking about the guy who, you know, traveled the first time he touched the ball in the NBA, and he was just so, like, sort of meek and shy, but you can see someone is maturing, coming to his own. You always recognize his basketball instinct, his ability on defense. So he was one of, if you want to say, like, okay, this season progressed, Otto is one of the main things you point to. Yeah, John Wall sort of legitimized himself with starting in the All-Star game, and, you know, but those were sort of expected. This is a guy, Otto Porter, who was the third pick overall, and, you know, what was sort of a down draft, and really coming into his own. So to put it past context of, you know, the problems we might discuss and the things that didn't go so well, Otto was one of those things, and overall I think this team progressed. We'll see how far coaching and changes that they say they're going to make take them, and if those changes actually are made.
So yes, definitely Otto was a bright spot and something to take away. I mean, when I look back on this postseason, where after I did a 2-week mourning after game six and the shot, and people in that arena, and going from the euphoria of, oh my god, we just tied the game, to it's over. Yeah. and that feeling, and I was there, and I've mentioned this before to people, I think online, and I'd watch, like, people in their seats would not leave. And eventually, ushers, so you had people, like, just devastated. You had ushers finally being like, yeah, game over. Time to go. Because they're like, game over, series over, it's all done. And I was kind of, like, dazed and confused. I go to the locker room, and we'll get into Paul Pierce later and some of his comments. And it was just kind of one of these, like, I mean, Beal looked like he was going to cry again, and Wall looked like he was going to cry. Whitman was just stunned. I wanted to ask Whitman some questions, and then I didn't get my question at the end because, you know, he had cut me off famously last year at a question. So I was kind of timid, but I was going to ask him a couple of questions. And then it was just like, man, what am I going to ask him right now? Like, I feel terrible inside. This guy, yeah. Did nothing. And the fact that those, to me, the takeaway for the postseason is the sweep of Toronto, for sure. The way they played and just dominated Toronto four games. No one really saw that coming. The Paul Pierce, I called game. Those two, to me, are the ones that you're always going to remember about this postseason. Oh, yeah. Like, you will not forget, especially when you talk about the context of this franchise and how many playoff series this team has won to sweep the Raptors. And then I called game without John Wall, going up 2-1. To me, then game five is the one that stands out too. So this is the so game five.
Game five. Because that's in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. 2-2. Series is tied at 2. 2-2. The Caps are also playing game seven in at the Rangers.
Same time.
And everyone listening as a Wizards and Caps fans, I know that who are listening, remembers this painful night. And so you're watching both of them, and I'm watching the Wizards. And when I look back on it, it kind of was that fourth quarter. If you remember, the Wizards were up 9 or 10 points, and they just went on this. And some of the play calling and the shot selection just got really bad. And then Korver leaked out and finally hit a three because Beal had locked Korver down all series.
Yeah.
And they finally got on a run. And then, to me, you know, then Pierce hits that three in the corner. I'm like,
he puts him up. Puts him up with 8 seconds left.
Again, yeah. He does it again, and then the rebound. And people will probably still remember, and they're going to blame Nene. And I kind of blame Nene more on some stuff in Game 6 than I do Game 5. We can debate whether or not. We're not going to get into what really happened. But then, you know, just that going from they win that game 3-2 coming home with John Wall, who was not going to play.
Yeah.
Broken wrist. And what a heroic performance. You know, one that you'll look back on and be like, oh my God, like that dude was a man. Even Game 1, where ends up he had a broken wrist early in the game and then ends up with an amazing stat line, basically played with a effed up wrist the whole game. And that will go down when you look at John Wall back in his career. And it's, you know, he's 25 today, by the way. Happy birthday, John Wall. The birthday song was for you to begin, John Wall, because I'm sure you're listening as well. I'm sure Dan Fagan and your whole crew is listening. But, and then to go from 3-2, you come back home and the offense struggles. They're not playing well. And then Otto Porter wasn't hitting threes. Paul Pierce was a disaster. I think he only had made one or two shots. Millsap was killing him, but yet they still gutted it out to the end and had the shot miraculously to tie it. And it doesn't go their way. So you feel the sense of, wow, like they should have won. If John Wall doesn't get injured, I still believe they win that series. John Wall doesn't get injured. But then John Wall comes back and they don't win. And then to me, I think that was bizarre. Then the Hawks go to Cleveland and Cleveland kicks their ass and goes big and dominates them on the boards. While we're criticizing Washington for not going small enough, then they ain't Gortat it. And then they go big and then they take on Atlanta. What was your thoughts on all that? Or your takeaways from the ending of what I just said?
Well, it's all about matches in the playoffs, and teams will go big and small at different times. Cleveland has LeBron James, a Karl Malone-sized guard. So that's a whole another bag of tricks. But you're right. When they were up, you know, when they're up 2-1 a series, even tied at 2-2, you just figure that something, even without Wall, this team is sort of coming together. Maybe some other guys can step up. Because, you know, Atlanta just didn't look like they were playing that great. No. I know T got sort of, you know, injured or roughed up at some point. So
Beal's in his head, too.
You know, and then they had lost Thabo Sefolosa. And, you know, they had some other parts that they weren't whole. It was, I think, the part when we look at 5 and 6, this team learned a lot of lessons. One, defensively, and it's, you know, what the baffling part was, they seem to admit that they learned their lessons right after losing games 5 and 6, when they could have made adjustments to maybe not play Nene as much, or, you know, play small, even smaller, because Randy Whitman showed the ability to adjust in the playoffs, but they didn't
play off Randy.
Yeah, they didn't play off Whitman. But it was clear that they didn't make enough adjustments. Maybe part of that is that they just simply didn't have enough wing defenders. And part, you know, you'll see the moves in the summer that they've made, you know, go to address some of those issues. But the offense too was an issue. Wall was doing his best with being hurt, but they didn't have enough play. Like Ramon Sessions, I thought he filled in, you know, as well as you can expect of a backup point guard. But they didn't have enough sort of off-the-dribble playmaking from the wings that could get the ball moving and maybe make the offense, make some things in passing lanes open up in the offense. So I'm not sure if they necessarily addressed the ball handling part this summer. You know, part of that depends on
who can create their own shot off. Who can create their own shot off the dribble, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, maybe Beal gets better. Maybe Gary Neal fills in like spot off the bench. But they have, I think, going to address the wing defensive issues. The big question to me is still, you know, they don't have a starting four I don't know if Jared Dudley, who's injured right now, I don't know if he's ever going to be the starting four anyway. He wants to come off the bench. He's better in that role. So you just wonder, do they start the season again with Nene and Gortat at the 4 and 5 because it sort of pleases everyone. You're sort of appeasing Nene. Sorry, my alarm's going off. But it remains to be seen how they'll handle the Nene situation. I imagine he maybe ends up starting the season at the 4 and plays less.
What I want to know is, what was your feelings of when the Paul Pierce shot went in and got called off? I want to know what you felt, your emotions, and then I want to know when you watched Atlanta then get ruled by Cleveland in the next series. Like your two emotions of those things, because I was, as a fan, I was like, damn it. It was like someone like, oh, like we...
Even if Cleveland probably, they would have been the favorites, I'm sure they might have beaten the Wizards, because we know John Wall at this point wasn't necessarily getting better. So it's almost like you really wanted them to play Cleveland just to, rekindle the old playoff matchups. And, just as soon as that Pierce shot was called off, which I was watching from home and I sort of knew right away, all right, the people in the arena were unaware a little bit longer, which had to be agonizing. It was tough. It was almost expected in a way, just because... Again, with this franchise, sometimes you expect, even good things to turn for the worse. But that's why, at the beginning of the show, I wanted to give the context. And maybe that context is more for myself. So as time has passed and it sort of take a break from the Wizards and maybe just watch basketball and try, stopping from covering and analyzing this team so much, it's made it easier to look at what last season was. And that was, again, it was one of the best seasons in... my time following this team closely was since 1990. I'd say it's a top season, maybe ranks up there with the time Weber and Howard lost to the Bulls in the first round. So I think that ultimately is what it comes back to, being okay with them losing in sort of an unsatisfying manner.
Yeah.
But even more okay with the direction of the franchise and the fact that you have guys like Wall and Bill and Otto on the team for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that Otto breaking out, like we mentioned before, makes it feel a little bit better, right? And then Wall, basically, honestly, the first five games of the playoffs, he was arguably the best NBA player in the playoffs before LeBron went nuts later on. And Curry, they were talking about how he was the best player in the all postseason, which is kind of crazy. And then he gets injured once again. The whole injury stuff, but then for him to battle back and came back, and then the Wizards win without him and actually competed without him, I thought was really impressive. No one wants to give playoff Randy any credit. They want to talk about just going small with Pierce and why didn't you do it in the regular season, and I understand that criticism. I agree with most of it, but the fact that when their best player goes out, they competed to the point where arguably what the other takeaway before we transition is the last four games went down to Paul Pierce's last shot. Which is pretty damn remarkable. One went in, and three didn't.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, actually, I'm not bad. Game 5, one did go in, and then they got the tip in.
The Al Horford.
Yeah, but then in game 4, if you remember, Pierce had the open look to tie the game in game 4 without Wall again. So he banks in. I called game 3, game 4 at home. I mean, in the Hawks basically outplayed in the first half. Wizards come back again. Will Bynum hits some free throws at the end of the game, which, what's up, Will? That's your main career. And then Pierce, once again, has an open look, better look than he's actually had, and misses it. And then the next two games, they play out in similar fashions at the end of the game. And that roller coaster of those games and that series, and that's what I'll remember. And unfortunately, obviously, it didn't work out for the Wizards.
This is just making me want to go back and just watch only game. Round one. I just want to, not necessarily the Hawks series, let's just watch round one and consider that is the highlight of the season. the sweep of the Raptors, especially how rabid their fan base is. And I can rest happy with putting, 2014-15 to bed. I also enjoy the fact that we're talking about that Pierce hit these shots. Yeah, he's sort of we'll get into Pierce, like you said, he's sort of a mercenary, came one season, hit a bunch of shots, but it's pretty cool that someone of a Hall of Fame caliber did that for this franchise for one year.
Yes, Oh, totally. And speaking of another memory, is Wale in game four in with his belt and a broom talking a bunch of junk while Drake, I believe, was out game three maybe and left.
He left early, I think, game three in D.C. and then was at... He never made it back.
So that was an awesome memory, and I was making a bunch of Game of Thrones references, like bringing Jon Snow. I was yelling. Nobody really get it outside the arena. Then I'd have like a couple people be like, "Oh yeah, that's really funny." Like I was like, "Bringing Jon Snow, need to help the North." But this transition right now, Buckhands next. The NBA draft comes. So the season we watched the rest of this. The finals playoffs play out. I kind of end up kind of not rooting for LeBron, but was impressed with him. And we've overanalyzed. We don't need to talk about what happened. The Warriors win. They beat the Cavs. Cavs got it out again in without some of their best players, Kevin Love and Kyrie. But the NBA draft comes. The Wizards have the 18th pick, I believe, in the NBA draft. And this year, I've basically covered the last three or four NBA drafts at the Verizon. I know you have been at multiple NBA drafts up in New York. Mm-hmm. Your kiss of Jan Vesely, Hansa. Yeah. Still probably the highlight of his career. That if you Google Jan Vesely, your quote and your post comes up of him and Eva kissing. This year, I was just kind of disengaged. I really wasn't feeling it this year. And so I go to a family vacation. And so I finally, about a week before, started doing some research and who do we want. And I didn't really go to too many workouts. I don't know if you went to any pre-draft workouts. I didn't really go to too many.
No, not this year. It was less motivation when you're not like...
You don't have this
bringing in a
pick.
Couple lottery pick options.
Yeah, when you go to the lottery picks and you're interviewing Harrison Barnes and Andre Drummond and Bradley Beal or John Wall and you're going to these top picks or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and now it's like, all right, who's this dude? Oh, yeah, like I kind of know him. Like, whatever. Well, so I'm sitting there. So I'm finally doing some research. And the day of the draft, and I'm going at all these players, and I look, and I almost tweet out that Kelly Oubre is such a Grunfeld pick, and so I didn't want to tweet it out because it looked like Oubre was going to go earlier because he's going to maybe go in the early teens, late lottery, and so the 18th Wizards wouldn't have him. So I don't tweet it out, and I was like,
but why? Why did you?
Why did I think that? Okay, because. It was such a JaVale, and set aside, we're going to go into about how the unfair observation of Kelly Oubre and his character integrity, but just this like long, athletic, like
lots of upside.
Oh, so much upside.
Questionable, college time.
Yeah, but just had the NBA body that he saw, like this thing that in for right or wrong with what he saw in Blotch, what he saw in McGee, Nick Young to a lesser extent. And his whole career has always been on that. But I was like, nah, I'm not going to tweet this out. I don't want to jinx it or whatever. So I go home on a fan vacation. I'm following the draft on my phone. I'm running it around. And all of a sudden, in my family, a lot of family members from... I was in Iowa at a lake trip because everyone wants to know that. But my family lives in Lawrence, Kansas. Big Jayhawk fans. So all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, hey, the Wizards just traded for Kelly Oubre from Kansas. Now, your average Kansas fan, if you talk to them about Kelly Oubre, they're like kind of disappointed. They had a lot of hype. Nothing really happened. Now, you can break down. He kind of didn't even play. Bill Self is a good coach. You got to play defense. If you don't, then he's not going to play you. Then he eventually did. And if you look, Kelly actually really did better at the end of the season in from Kansas.
Yeah, he really progressed, but wasn't starting at the beginning of the season. Starting.
And so now it's just really hot. It's really hard. But then I also look back when people talk about it. I was like, go look at Paul George's stats at Fresno State. You look at his stats, you'd be like, this guy will never be good at the NBA. then he comes to the NBA. So there is some, but then there is some examples. I always use him as a thing because where we get caught up in terms of success or these things because it's a different system in college, and that's a whole other conversation. But then they trade, and then I'm like, okay, well, but I was all in on Bobby Portis, the guy for Arkansas, and he was the stretch four at the end of the season. That's all people want to talk about. They need a stretch four. They need a guy. You talked about it earlier about how we needed someone to play the four spot. And here was And he keeps falling. Portis is falling. Portis is falling. Now, they say later that they didn't think Portis was going to fall to them. Of course, I think that is some revisionist history that trying to self.
Right. Because the Wizards had the 19th pick. They 19th, traded 19th? Up.
I'm sorry, 19th?
Yeah, they traded okay. up to Oubre, was taken at 15. And then Portis went all the way to the Bulls, of course, yes. at 22.
Yes, yes. In the Bulls. So, your... And what was tough about this is that, so I was disappointed that the Wizards once again traded picks to move up for another player I thought was a better fit, because Oubre had a really talented lefty shooter, but I don't really see Randy Whitman playing him. And we've just seen, you know, how young players have really kind of struggled somewhat in Randy Whitman's doghouse. Maybe it's a lot their fault, some responsibility on him. We haven't really seen like so much development of a young player. So take a high upside guy when we just talked about how we thought that they were one injury away from being the final four in the NBA.
Yeah.
And to go to find some guy where, like, I don't know if he was a rotation player. I mean, I get it. I get, like, you basically got a guy. So if he stays at Kansas next year, blows up, and is Big 12 player of the year, All-American, he's probably a top five pick. I get that. But I don't know if they really have the luxury to be trading picks again, because of last year trading out of the complete draft, which
yeah,
is
they gave up 2 second rounders yes. for Oubre,
selling picks, all this stuff. So they trade 2 second round picks to Oubre. So your reaction before we get into Oubre as a player, your reaction with them doing this move, and who did you want them to draft? I mean, I really want them to get Bobby Portis. So I thought that was the guy that perfectly fit. He played defense, could shoot the three, multiple positions. I know you're an SEC guy, so you probably had seen him play a little bit.
Yeah, I paid attention less to the prospects this year. Usually I have a hard time being so entrenched in NBA just to keep up with college anyway. And you know, when the Wizards have had higher picks, I've done a lot more studying and research. But I did, I think my thing was drafting. Yeah, draft's a big sort of stretch four type of guy. You know, that's obviously the way the team, the league wants to go. Why not get someone who seemed to fit the mold? You have a decent pick at 19. There are others, you know, others that fit that similar style, you know, on the map. But I was, especially in the sense that, like, Kevin Seraphin's the last big man that they've drafted that they've tried to groom and be within the system. He, you know, we already knew this was the draft as well before he signed with the Knicks. But you kind of figured that he was likely gone. And so a lot of their big men project, you know, the big men draft picks have not really worked out. You mentioned McGee or Vesely. But in spite of all that, I thought Bobby Portis was sort of number one on my list at that point. I had the question if he could shoot a NBA range three,
yeah.
Which he proved in summer league. He hit him yes. at a decent clip for the playing for the Bulls. So that was my head scratcher about this.
Was it such a Grunfeld move, though, going back to my original point?
I guess so, yeah. It's like some, you know, it was very out of the blue, because as much as people know of rumors and who might go where, you know, I don't think even like Woj, who almost, you know, tweets out the draft picks before it happens, I don't think he necessarily saw this coming. So it definitely, it felt Grunfeld like that. It's like, oh, I'm a sort of trade up to get the guy who could be an all-star one day, as opposed to taking Portis, who, you know, let's be honest, he could, you know, Portis maybe just an off-the-bench sort of guy in the NBA. So I think it was Grunfeld trying to shoot for the stars a little bit. Now, if we train, you know, that's just the feeling at draft time. I, as you know, the more I got to watch Oubre during the summer league,
we'll get into this,
you know, my opinion started to change, but I still sort of struggle with giving up 2 second round picks,
assets.
Which is like, they are assets. I know, like, you know, previous years they've sold their pick, but at least this year they drafted Aaron White, and they're using the European system to develop him while not taking up a roster spot, like, you know, by keeping him stateside, signing him, sending him to the D League or whatever. So now they're actually using the system to help develop a pick instead of selling it. But yeah, that's the thing, trading up from 19 to 15 to get this guy. You know, I don't want to, you know, second round picks don't make it a lot, so I don't want to make it all about the assets.
And even the 19th pick overall sometimes is like, if you want to get a rotation guy at 19, that's like a good pick, right? Like,
yeah, so I can't, You know, I wish it would have been a bigger guy, but if you look at the length of Uber, maybe he also fits the mold of like a 3-and-D guy, and that's, you know, that's another sort of trend in NBA, or not even a trend, but, you know, stretch fours and 3-and-D guys are highly valued. So if you look at it from that perspective, maybe, you know, maybe it's not as bad as is not having a young big man in the pipeline, which the Wizards don't have any of right now, except, you know, of course, Aaron White, as we mentioned, a second-round pick who will be developing in Germany for the next couple of years.
Well, we'll get into Mr. The Flying Ginger, because I have a personal affinity towards him.
Right.
But I want to keep talking about Oubre and Grunfeld. So I think also, too, what happens, about my opinion, and I think Wizards fans in general, people that are listening, is that it's hard with Ernie Grunfeld to just analyze the pick in its like vacuum. Like, individually, you have such a, like, Jordan Clarkson last year. Like, you sell him, right? Like, go back to, like they trade two picks for Trevor Booker, and then they don't re-sign him. But, and I was like, why did you trade two picks to get him? Like, DeJuan Blair back in the day, they sell a pick again, don't draft DeJuan Blair, which is kind of ironic because now DeJuan Blair is on this team. The one is, I'm like at draft day, and I'm like, draft Draymond Green, draft Draymond Green, draft Draymond Green, draft Draymond Green, and they draft Thomas Satoransky.
He still might be good.
But it's just like Draymond Green, again. And then last year, here they are, second round playoffs, and then they trade the first round pick for Gortat, and then they sell the second round pick, and maybe it's just because us as fans, we're just waiting to see what the Wizards do, and then they sell the pick, and then you're like, you cheap asses, and like, what are you doing? And then that guy ends up being like one of the top rookies, and then you're just like, and then when they do draft Glenn Rice Jr., and then he has arguably a better summer than Otto Porter, who was number three, and then they
Rice was the MVP of that summer league.
And we'll get into that as well, but like, and then they get rid of him, and it's just like, I just like this way that they're discarding young talent, and I don't see the Spurs, I don't see all these other like these other teams like if you're one piece away from the title, I get it or something, right? Like, but the way that they just kind of discard these picks and like this thing, and like, it's really hard for me to be like, and then I see like Grunfeld again did this, like, and so it's hard for me to be like, maybe it's a good move, like maybe it really is a good move to get over.
As a counterpoint, and I think Rice is in a different situation with his personality, yeah. He may have made his bed, but as a counterpoint, at least they kept the pick, because, you know, certainly I don't, you know, we don't know about the rumors or whatever leading up to the February trade deadline, but the Wizards certainly could have tried to like, oh, we need to add another piece for the playoffs, let's trade this pick now. And then that would, you know, certainly there would have been a lot of criticism there, but, you know, there's almost something to them keeping the pick and saying, okay, let's at least draft a guy who could be very special one day. And maybe that's the small win in this situation, although, you know, draft is so uncertain anyway, and who knows, you know, what a lot of these guys are going to be doing in a couple of years.
No, but I think also, too, is like, I'm contradicting myself in a way, because one of the criticisms about Grunfeld's tenure is this way that he would just not have, like, he'd have young players, but if they're rebuilding, then he would, like, throw them in. But if they were, like, trying to win it, then he would just bury them on the end of the bench. Like, they wouldn't play. And so, like, there was never, like, where other teams just kind of, like, you'd have these young players just kind of like, oh, this other dude's got some talent. And, like, you would, like, oh, put him in when things go. And, like, they just find these, like, free agent old dudes at the end of the bench that they'd sign over Mo Evans and go down the list. And there'd never be just, like, oh, give this, like, second round young dude a shot. And be, like, a D-leaguer. Like, it would just never be, like, some kind of thing where other teams seemed like they had some type of thing. So I guess now maybe I'm criticizing him for
you're getting the coaching territory, yeah, too, because, yeah, yeah, like, you know, Eddie totally. Jordan was hard on rookies.
Yes.
Then Flip Saunders, you know, Flip Saunders, quote-unquote, didn't sign up for a bunch of kids. He signed up for a playoff team, and so he sort of had his thing. Of course, he turned to a development thing before, you know, he ultimately was fired. And then, of course, you know, we all know Whitman. You know, I'll always love the famous JaVale McGee thing when he did something stupid in Milwaukee, and Whitman goes like, "I'm done playing these kids," and he benched McGee for several games. And there is something to, yeah, I think this franchise under Grunfeld has trouble like balancing the development of rookies with the veterans.
Yes.
But there's also something to, and this is maybe speaks to another Grunfeld thing, like try not to draft quote unquote knuckleheads, which has obviously happened.
Great segue.
But it speaks to, like, at least you had these coaches, maybe Whitman, this is one of the things that I respected him the most about, like, he actually drew a line in the sand, because I know people want young players to just, oh, they're just given time, they're supposed to develop, here's some time. Yes, I do admit that you know, you develop more on the court than you do watching the game. It's also a hybrid of both. But I respect that Whitman helped draw the line and help change the culture
for sure
of this team.
I think going back to your knucklehead, so here's the deal with Oubre. So, like, and I said, like, the first thing I said was being unfair to him because of the Grunfeld context, right? Yeah. So I'm not evaluating Oubre. I'm just like, again, he drafts some dude who had all this talent, kind of disappointing, one and done, young dude who's got this talent, but not really going to contribute. And I don't see him in the rotation next year. We'll get into that as well.
Which is fine. Yeah.
But, like, I feel like they need some more pieces in the rotation. And so then you do, and you give up assets to move up when I felt like you could get a player just as good who'd be in the rotation as a Portis without giving up the assets. That was my main
beef. Right.
But then when I want to evaluate just Kelly Oubre as a player.
Yeah, you have
so,
to.
Like, I have to evaluate.
You have to go to Summer League now.
We'll go to Summer. But then eventually, what happens? What's the immediate coverage? They're like, he's a knucklehead. So Connor Dirks.
Okay.
I know you're listening. Yeah, Then the dude writes a column in the Washington Times, calls him a knucklehead, compares him to all these players, which I thought was just this bitter white old man sports journalism column that was cheap hits. And I hate knucklehead comments because I think that I personally believe that knucklehead has a lot of racial subcontext myself because I can't define who's a knucklehead. And they never seem to call white people knuckleheads. But anyway, here or there. But the point is that immediately, it was like, this guy, he hadn't even done anything, man. He's like 19 years old, gets drafted. Because of what? Because he had nice shoes. Let's go to it. So he's at the draft day. He's Periscope. He's on social media. He's 19. Come on, man. What would you do at 19 years old, man, with your friends?
You just got money. This isn't even, I forgot who, Connor wrote a good, like, piece.
Response to it.
Response.
And we'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, it was Tom Lavero. He wrote a nice piece. Connor wrote a good piece in response to that. And it's like,
it's
unfair to, like, you know, to lose the context of how you were once young and you didn't know all the decisions despite having, you know, a lot of things at your foot, getting drafted, $1 million, having great, you know, being in a great situation. Ultimately, I hate to even give attention to something like, you know, Jason, the Tom Lavero or Jason Reed, like, talking about Wall's tattoos. Like, I hate to even give, yes, those things deserve to be shot down, but I hate to make it even more of a focus, you know, as part of the, you know, the conversation surrounding Kelly Oubre.
Because it's such a ridiculous comment,
like, talking about, like, the player who we hope is someone on the basketball court.
I was like, he hasn't even, like, done anything. And you're always, like, saying that he's a knucklehead comparing him to, like, JaVale McGee and Andre Blatch, like, being out of shape. And, like, and all Nick Young not passing because the dude had, like, red shoes. Like,
that was your whole argument. He was also, like, you know, he also is a very confident guy.
Oh, no, he said, okay, what it was. Yeah, he said he was going to be the best player ever. What did he say?
There's a whole capture about going to the NBA Finals or, like, you know, there's a whole.
What do you want him to say?
Yeah, he's, like, a confident guy.
He's 19.
Take it with a grain of salt. Who, you know, he'll quickly learn. That confidence will quickly get adjusted by veterans in the locker room and the fact that, you know, he's going to have to go through a tough learning process in the NBA. So I think he'll either figure it out or he won't, like so many other players. But to your point, it's like, it's no sense of thinking that a 19-year-old, what they say and do now is going to predicate how they're able to develop going forward.
No, I just think it goes back to where, like, when I'm talking about how I'm upset about when Grunfeld giving assets and all these things, like, there's the context of that. Instead, it's just like, oh, Grunfeld takes this knucklehead again with, like, shoes, and he's a show-off, and he thinks his ego's this, but here's his stats in Kansas. He didn't do anything. He's a bad person. That's, like, moralizing, like, something because, like, he periscopes or he, like, tweets about some stuff, and, like, and, like, it seems like a good dude. Like, he has a great story. We'll get into Kelly. And to finish about the draft. And so what changes my, you know, from a personal standpoint, I'm a University of Iowa graduate, the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Okay.
And so I follow the Iowa basketball program. And we do not, for those wondering, without the Google machine, Reggie Evans was the... Devin Marble got drafted last year. Between Devin Marble and Reggie Evans, it was about 11, 12 years between draft picks. And so back-to-back was Devin Marble with the Magic and Aaron White with the Wizards. And they had worked out Aaron White, and the fact that they drafted him, which just made my... So here I am complaining. It made my heart flutter. I mean, kind of...
George, you got a little lightheaded. You got... Yeah, 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 you had like a fainting couch,
yes.
I think.
Oh, yeah. Georgetown... fans that are listening to this, I get it, where like they drafted Otto Porter, made you really, really excited. I feel like the free Otto, the chance at the Verizon Center, Otto Porter. Yeah. That's the other thing.
That's all Georgetown.
Yeah, it's so, all yeah. just loving the Otto Porter, right? And like, Whitman sucks. And like, people would be yelling. I'd be like, why are you mad about Whitman? They'd be like, because Otto Porter's not playing. Like, literally, yeah. like every time yeah. I'd hear someone yell at the crowd and ask them why they're mad, it was all because Otto wasn't playing. And so here, Aaron White, Flying Ginger, Ohio, leading all time scorer, rebounder at the University of Iowa, or leading all time rebounder, hustled, super athletic. What's really funny is that so he gets drafted. Immediately, I'm really skeptical whether or not he's going to make this roster. I don't know if this is the right situation for him to be in the NBA. And then it kind of leaked out, and you had mentioned it, that he's going to go to Europe. He goes to Summer League, and like I think he showed his athleticism. And we'll get into Summer League a little later. But I just personally, I call him the Flying Ginger. I Googled to see if anyone else has called him Flying Ginger because he's redhead. But he's a sneaky white guy. And then when he dunked on some people were like, oh, yeah, the white guy can dunk. And I always kind of like it sometimes where like the white dude dunks and they're like, oh, shit. Everyone like kind of freaks out more when the white dude dunks. Speaking as two white guys, and I can't dunk. I don't know if Kyle can.
I have dunk? A couple have of times once? In life.
Twice?
Yeah.
Well, give me a story.
It's pick usually up, on the court. No, never like in a game. Usually on the like court, court? Like playing around myself. I'm like, ah, oh, let me.
Did you ever try to get up and dunk? Did you ever try to dunk in a game?
No, I think
before your knee injuries, before your bad knees, before
I've
bad
always
knees.
Known better than to try to throw in down in the game. I think it's. I was at the level where let's go with the 2 points. Let's go with the more, you know, the more secure deal at that point.
But I always feel like in that kind of situation, you got to evaluate what you're doing because you're on a pickup game, you're somewhere, some court, you're trying to dunk on some people. Like, got to make sure that like, you got some people around. You don't know when to go in the trunk. Yeah, like, why man can't jump? You can't be embarrassing anyone, right?
Know where you're playing, yeah.
We are going to end this right now for everyone listening.
Take a little break.
Yeah, we're going to take a break and we're going to have a little music. John Wall turned 25 today, if you did not hear. And I hope that the crew of the Five Deep crew is behaving.
Yeah.
Actually, his birthday party was Friday night. I didn't get an invite. Thanks, John. I didn't get an invite.
He was in New York, I guess. He didn't have to. Well, maybe they flew there already. But
today is his actual birthday.
Yes,
the 25th. Or 25, 1990. What's also funny too about Wall is like the last couple of years he's had like 3 different birthday parties, so I don't know if he's gonna have like a DC party.
Yeah, you know, when you get grown up, sometimes you celebrate a whole birthday week. I've been telling people like at my age, at some point you don't really get presents from people; you just buy yourself a present.
Or shitty like fireball shots. Right?
Yeah, something like that.
Nobody sees Sars Casey and they can't handle his fireball shots, and it has to be a drunk idiot for the USC boosters. Anyway, this is Adam McGinnis.
Kyle Weedye here.
Thanks for round one. We're coming back. We're going to talk about the Summer League, the signings, the roster, and everything. Watching the Wizards.
Everything summer.
Bye bye.